You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Good morning. I'm Joy Cardine. Happy to have you along on this Tuesday, January the 16th. It's coming up on 10 minutes past 7 o'clock. We will get more analysis of President Bush's new plan for Iraq this hour. As you know, he's sending 21,000 additional troops there and insisting that the Iraqi government step up its own security efforts. We'll talk some about how Iran also figures into all of this. Defense Secretary Robert Gates said yesterday that the recent military moves in the Persian Gulf are aimed at what he calls Iran's negative behavior. Gates said the deployment of a second Patriot missile battalion and a second aircraft carrier to the Gulf region is meant to undercut Tehran's belief that American forces are overcommitted in Iraq. He says there are no immediate plans to have diplomatic talks with Iran, but said that they might be possible in the future if Iranians play a constructive role in Iraq. While this is all going on, Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice says that she will bring together the Israeli and Palestinian leaders to explore ideas for an eventual Palestinian state. She said that the meetings will take place relatively soon, but didn't set a date. Condoleezza Rice is on a Mideast tour trying to rally support for the new Iraq plan. We heard in NPR News she asked Saudi Arabia today for help to assist Iraq in reconciling the Sunnis and the Shias. Rice's visit to the Middle East was mocked in some Arab newspapers. One newspaper in Saudi Arabia wrote, "The U.S. government should first of all convince its own people about this strategy before trying to convince the world. The American administration has no right to ask the Iraqis and other countries in the region to follow its strategy when the administration itself is incapable of convincing even Americans of this policy." So we'll talk about all of these developments this hour and the implications of this new strategy for Iraq with our guest political scientist who is an expert in the Middle East, and we will welcome your questions. 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234. In Madison, 263-1890, 263-1890. What are the implications of this new strategy for Iraq for the entire region? Why is this reportedly extremely unpopular policy being pursued so vigorously by the Bush administration? And can anything be done about it? Our guest is Michael Barnett, Professor of Political Science and the Stassen Chair of International Affairs at the Hubert Humphrey School of Public Affairs at the University of Minnesota. He joins us by telephone. Good morning.
Good morning.
Thanks for being with us. I hardly know where to start. The president defended his policy on 60 Minutes on Sunday, and a lot of people are still talking about that. He concluded that interview by saying it was important for him to continue to explain why he believes we can be successful in Iraq and explain to the American people that what happens in the Middle East will affect the future of this country. Is that what's at stake, the future of this country?
Well, there's been a long-standing view, and the president's not alone here. I think it's shared by so many people, and it's been shared by a succeeding number of the American administrations, that, in fact, the events in the Middle East do affect the American people. And you can just sort of run through the list today, and that includes not only the possibility of terrorism, but also the price of oil. And there are other kinds of, you know, there are, of course, there's tremendous support for Israel and identification by a wide swath of the American population with Israel. So there are a variety of ways in which the American people will be affected by what takes place in the Middle East. So I think on that ground, the president is on solid footing.
Yeah. Why? Can you help us understand why, when we hear so many military experts and so many other politicians, the Iraq Study Group among them, saying that this surge is not going to work, that we should begin withdrawing troops, that President Bush and apparently Dick Cheney are going it alone almost on with this strategy. Why they are pursuing this so vigorously?
Well, there are any number of speculations, including the fact that once they've dug in, they've fundamentally dug in, and it's difficult to see a reasonable way out. And I guess to some extent to justify their position, it's not clear necessarily that the Iraq Study Group necessarily, the report necessarily had a slam dunk plan for getting the United States out of this mess and leaving something considerably better behind than what we see today. At the same time, though, it's also difficult to run away from the observation that from the very beginning of the Bush administration, and especially when it came to considerations about Iraq, this was not a group that ever consulted much with those on the outside, and it was not a group that ever welcomed demurs. It was not a group that welcomed criticism, and it was always a very tight-knit group that essentially made decisions on their own and did so in many respects based on the fundamental belief that they were right and would be found out right, and that their critics were wrong and were naysayers. So in many respects, when we look at the entire stream of Iraq policy, beginning with its original conception and running through today, there has been, I think, a dominant theme of isolation by the Bush administration from alternative voices and an unwillingness to accept criticism and an unwillingness to really think openly about the extent to which their policies might not be as potentially successful as they believe.
Our guest is Michael Barnett. He is a professor of political science with the Hubert Humphrey School of Public Affairs at the University of Minnesota. He's talking with us about some of the latest developments in Iraq, Iran, the Middle East. 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234. In Madison, 263-1890, 263-1890. We're talking about reaction to the new Iraq plan and the implications for the entire region. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. This is the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine. It's coming up on about 18 and a half minutes past 7 o'clock on this Tuesday, January the 16th, talking with Professor Michael Barnett this hour about the Iraq strategy, the new Iraq strategy, and also talking about Condoleezza Rice's Middle East tour going on right now. We heard about it in NPR News. She is trying to rally support for Bush's Iraq plan. And this was being criticized in a number of Arab states in the Gulf. Newspapers in the region voiced skepticism over her tour and even mocked it to some extent, saying, you know where we stand on this. What are you doing? Professor Barnett, what do you think of Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice's Mideast tour?
Well, it's difficult to take it too seriously, to the extent that it's difficult to imagine, as the Saudis have already reacted and as many newspapers in the region have said, that Secretary of State Rice will be able to convince Arab officials, who in many respects have more at stake at what takes place in Iraq than Americans do, that the Bush strategy is a winning strategy. So she may be going to the region and trying to figure out a way in which there may be able to generate some assistance from the Saudis and from the Jordanians, who might be able to talk to their Sunni compatriots and encourage them to find a way to come to an agreement with the Shia in Iraq. At the same time, though, I think everybody right now is focused not so much on whether the surge strategy is going to work, but rather how they deal with the what they consider to be the inevitable, which is a complete failure of the surge strategy and the consequences thereof. So they're preparing for the worst. They're not imagining that the Bush strategy is going to work. They don't have a lot of faith right now in the Bush administration's ability to run the Iraq campaign. They didn't have much faith to begin with, and there's been nothing over the last several years to necessarily win them over. So the mood in the region is very much of preparing for the worst-case scenarios and assuming that right now the Bush strategy is not necessarily going to derail the train.
Now, we heard in NPR News that Condoleezza Rice asked Saudi Arabia for help, I think financial assistance, but also help in assisting Iraq in reconciling the Sunnis and the Shias. Can Saudi Arabia do that?
Not so much. Not necessarily given the fact that at this moment in time, it looks like what the Shia have in mind is, and this is the government of Maliki, is very much that it's a winner-take-all situation, and they expect very much to be the winner. And the Saudis and others, it's not as if the Saudis have not been trying, or the Jordanians have not been somehow involved in negotiations or involved in talking to their Sunni compatriots. It's just simply not true. In fact, they've been deeply involved for the last couple of years in trying to extend their influence and see whether, in fact, they might be able to bring the parties to the table. But I think at this point, everybody understands that in many respects, the game has changed. We're no longer talking about reconciliation. We're talking about the moment of a civil war, and we are talking about the possibility that civil war is going to intensify greatly, especially once and if and when the surge strategy fails.
Yeah. What about Iran? How does it play into all of this? And what about the U.S. Sending more warships over there and Patriot missiles, stationing those?
Well, there are two possibilities about how to interpret these events. One possibility is what the Bush administration is just trying to flex its muscle and trying to use something that we might just simply call coercive diplomacy to convince the Iranians to settle down and play nice. And so, sending the Patriot missile, sending a couple of battleships over, articulating a kind of muscular foreign policy towards the Iranians and telling them to beware and behave or else, maybe in some sense a set of strategic moves that are designed to cower the Iranians, not as if the Iranians have demonstrated in the past several years that they've necessarily responded well to threats. The other possibility, and I think the one that's more worrisome, even if it's a lower probability, is the fact that the Americans are actually getting ready for a war with Iran by the end of the year. There are a variety of reports, and it's sometimes difficult to know how serious to take them and whether these reports are simply part of the same kind of bullying strategy. But there are reports that say that the Americans are actually getting quite ready for the idea of a military intervention in Iran. And while I'm someone who very much believe from the very moment the Bush administration said they were thinking about a war against Iraq, thought that the train had left the station and that the Americans were going to go into Iraq regardless of what the American people or the world community thought, I have a hard time understanding why it is that there seems to be so much conversation and activity right now in Washington in some circles over the idea of a military invasion or even a limited military attack against Iran, because at this moment in time, that would just seem to be virtually disastrous.
Yeah, what would the implications be of, say, the U.S. lobbing a missile into Iran?
Well, I think the Iranians, depending on how far they wanted to push it, might very well say that all bets are off, to the extent that they certainly have a very easy way of delivering payback to the Americans who are 130,000 and now maybe 150,000 strong in neighboring Iraq. And the payback could also include increasing their support for terrorism, not only in the Middle East, but also reaching out to American targets. So in many respects, if you were to ask who's more vulnerable, you'd have to conclude in many respects that the Americans are more vulnerable than Iran to any kind of military attack. And it's not to say that the Iranians would not suffer and suffer greatly, but most military experts believe that if the United States were to have a limited strike trying to take out Iran's nuclear capabilities, they would probably be ineffective and would only simply stir the pot.
Yeah. What do you make of the talk? We hear some reports. I think Israel denies it, but that Israel is ready to start striking on Iran's nuclear facilities.
Well, that talk's been present now for the last couple of years, and it's coincided with the growing pressure by the Security Council and by Europe, and particularly by the U.S. on Iran to come clean on its nuclear program and to open itself to more international oversight. So that talk has been there for a while. The Israelis have at times put out the message, and then the next day will retract it or deny that they're really considering any kind of strike. The reason why I suspect that the Israelis are talking the game but are unlikely to deliver is severalfold. One is that by talking the game, they certainly keep the heat on the Security Council to keep trying to pressure Iran, because the last thing the Security Council really wants is for Israel to strike out on its own. So if you don't want Israel to strike out on its own, then it's up to the Security Council and the various talks to keep Iran in the negotiating game. The other is, I think, to convince the Israeli people that Israel is not going to, that the Israeli leaders are not going to allow an Iran, which is essentially made very, very strikingly offensive comments towards Israel, aggressive comments towards Israel, that the Israeli leaders will do whatever they need to do to protect Israel and the Israeli public.
Yeah. I'm looking at, well, let me ask you first whether or not this is a big news that Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice says that the Israeli and Palestinian leaders will be brought together to explore ideas for an eventual Palestinian state. This meeting will take place relatively soon, but she didn't set a date. Is that a big deal?
Not really, because, in fact, the Israelis and the Palestinians have been talking about an eventual Palestinian state for a long time, and they've had these conversations with each other for a while. We had, under various plans, the notion of a Palestinian state within 5 years. That was articulated in Oslo II almost 10 years ago. And so we've had these conversations about the possibility of a Palestinian state. If there's any reason to take it a little more seriously now, though, is that there is this question about whether you could deliver a Palestinian state now that in which its authority, its governance structure, and even its borders are not defined, but nevertheless would have sovereignty and would get international recognition and therefore seat at the UN. Is it possible to think about delivering a gift to the Palestinians now, and somehow that will make things better? There are lots of reasons to believe that the conditions under which that's likely to happen are fairly restrictive, including the fact that Hamas is unlikely to ever go along with that on the grounds that it's simply, once again, given the Israelis a gift without the Israelis having to give anything to the Palestinians.
We are talking with a guest political analyst this hour who's an expert on the Middle East about the reaction to and the implications of the president's new strategy for Iraq, talking about Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice's Mideast tour, this listening session. She's trying to rally support for the new plan for Iraq. And we are also talking about other developments in this ongoing story. Michael Barnett, our guest, and our number, 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, in Madison, 263-1890. This is the Ideas Network. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. Good to have you with us on this Tuesday, January the 16th. It's about 7:36. We are talking with Michael Barnett. He's a professor of political science and the Stassen Chair of International Affairs at the Hubert Humphrey School of Public Affairs at the University of Minnesota. Michael Barnett, formerly with the University of Wisconsin, and someone we talk to on a fairly regular basis about issues in the Middle East. And we are talking with him about the reaction to the new plan for Iraq, President Bush's new Iraq plan, and the implication for the entire region, talking about lots of developments in this story over the last couple of days, including Condoleezza Rice's visit to the Middle East. She's on a tour trying to rally support. And we're wondering what questions or comments you have. 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. In Madison, 263-1890, 263-1890. And we'll go to the phones and take our first caller, Bernie in Whitewater. Hi, Bernie. You're on the air.
Good morning. 2 points. One is I heard reported on Democracy Now! Within the last few weeks that the current plan that our government has for Iraqi oil reserves is for the Iraqi people to keep 25% and U.S. and other favorable oil companies to get 75% of the profit. And the Iraqi oil workers, et cetera, are resisting this, but that is what our government's pushing, and I don't hear that on the mainstream news. Also wanted to point out, with respect to Israel and Palestine, whether it's a Democrat like Bill Clinton in office with a negotiator like Dennis Ross, or whether it's Condoleezza Rice, our government is always going to be very pro-Israel. It's going to be, you know, the Palestinians, whatever they get offered is going to be a bad deal. They'll never mention all the UN resolutions against Israel. And basically, it's just going to be the same bad policies and imperialism, colonialism over in Iraq. And the pundits aren't even talking about how we defied international law as a country to go in there. And we just keep going as if it's somehow legitimate, which is an insult to all Americans who know anything about treaties and international law.
Professor Barnett?
Well, I actually have not heard that report about the allocation of the Iraqi oil profits. It's a little surprising. I'm going to check that out as soon as we end the program. But most of the reports that I've seen have talked about certainly that if the American oil company is going to come in and help to reconstruct the Iraqi oil industry, and certainly the American companies have been given an in as other non-American oil companies have actually been shut out from the Iraq reconstruction market. There, I still would find it difficult to imagine that the split would be on the order of 75-25. Certainly there's going to be some kind of, I don't want to say profit sharing, but if American oil companies are going to come in, they certainly are expecting their profits. At the same time, though, what we are seeing emerge in Iraq, assuming that we have any kind of national government in Iraq, is always the possibility, as Iraq has done in the past, of nationalization and taking over the oil industry. Now, Iraq is going to need the foreign assistance in various kinds, but if Iraq does become, once again, an effective sovereign government, then nationalization is always on the table. And there's always a danger down the road, as we know that today, in fact, Maliki is resisting the surge plan. It's difficult to imagine right now how the surge is going to work when, in fact, we can't get the Maliki government on board. And what that does point to is the fact that the Maliki government does have its own mind, that the Iraqis do have their own interests, and the interests of Iraq and the United States may diverge at various moments, and it's going to be difficult at times to get for the Americans to get their way in Iraq, as we've seen time and time again. So it may be all very well and good that there are individuals in the United States that are dreaming up great, great dreams of super profits. Their ability to actually get access to those super profits, I think, is something else. Mm. In terms of the comment with respect to Israel, yes, every single administration since the Truman administration has been pro-Israel, has claimed that it would stand by Israel and stand for its survival. But I do think, though, that to go from there to the conclusion that anything that's ever going to be offered the Palestinians is going to be a raw deal, I think is a bit of a leap. The second Clinton plan that came out in December, and then December of 2000 before he left office, and then the negotiations that were supported by the Clinton administration the following month, came pretty close to giving the Palestinians just about everything they wanted, including what Hamas wants right now. So, you know, the Palestinians are probably not going to get the idealized dream. But in at least the world in the Middle East, if you keep on holding out for the utopian ideal, then you're going to be waiting a very long time. And I think we all know that if there is going to be any kind of deal between the Israelis and the Palestinians, there's going to have to be a little bit of give. I mean, there's going to be give on both sides. But I think to completely dismiss the idea that any kind of imaginable agreement between the Israelis and the Palestinians means that the Palestinians, by definition, have gotten the short end of the stick, I think is a little premature.
Thank you, Bernie, for the call. I'm going to move now to John in Green Bay. Hi, John. You're on the air.
Hi. Good morning. You know, I just have a couple of questions and comments. One is, I'm wondering what, and first of all, I'm not in support of the war. I am in support of the troops. But I just wonder what President Bush could have said in his address that would have made the American people happy. I guess one of the things that I have a problem with is if you talk to people that have been in Iraq, and the comments are almost always the same. If we left now, it would be a complete disaster. And all of the troops that have died and have been wounded, it would be more or less in vain. And I don't really see that as an option, and yet that's really all that we hear. And I think I wonder sometimes, as is with elected officials, I wonder how many people really have dug into exactly what's happening there and exactly the ramifications of us withdrawing. And I just wonder, just from, I guess I get up every day, go to work, I have kids, and we're busy and we do things, and everything I hear is negative about what's going on. And I just wonder how a person can get a good view or perspective on what really is going on, because I think there's a lot more to it than really what, I guess, what we hear in mainstream media.
Professor Burnett?
It's a great question, a great set of observations, and I think the caller puts his finger exactly on the difficulties that many of us have right now. And if I could be not overly provocative, but I think somewhat more succinct, it would be that we have lost in Iraq. By we, I mean the Americans in terms of any kind of vision that we have had in the short term of having a democratic and stable Iraq. I think that vision is gone. Most folks in Washington know it, and the problem is that we have a very difficult time saying that. The president, I understand, you know, understandably, is committed to still trying to demonstrate that there's a reason why we went there, and that the 2,000 plus troops who lost their lives did not do so in vain. But my gut strongly tells me that in some sense we have lost. And now the question is, if we assume that we have lost and that the situation now is bad, the question becomes, what are the different degrees of failure that we can imagine? Are there worst-case scenarios and really, really worst-case scenarios? And right now, most of us are just trying to array in our heads those future scenarios. And some have even suggested, like Steve Biddle, who's a foreign policy expert at Brookings, has suggested that he can even imagine a possible nuclear war down the road because of this. And so if that's the case, having to contain civil war is not so bad. So the problem then is that, can you find a policy, and this is what the president's been desperately trying to do, find a policy that can make it appear that we still have a chance of winning, when in fact I think most people outside of the White House are firmly of the belief that in many respects we have lost, and then the question is, how do we get out of a losing situation with any kind of dignity and with the hope that we might actually preserve some semblance of stability in Iraq? And there are no good answers. And I think the Iraq Study Group report, if it can be faulted, and it can be faulted in many ways, it is that the scenario they painted was, I think, in many respects, just a little more likely to work than the Bush's surge strategy. But they said it was a low probability that their strategy would work, which was essentially some disengagement, bringing in diplomatic talks from the region. And if it did not work, which I think, if you read between the lines, suggested it would not work, then where are you? And I think that's the problem that we're trying to get our head around, is that we're looking at a nightmare scenario in Iraq, and we just don't know how to grapple with that. And the idea for many people of putting more troops into Iraq, and with the consequence of more American lives lost, is for many, I think, so painful that they can't even begin to imagine it.
Well, we are and will continue grappling with the nightmare of Iraq. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. Our guest is Michael Barnett, who is a professor of political science at the University of Minnesota. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's about 12 minutes before 8 o'clock. Talking with Professor Michael Barnett this hour about reaction to the Iraq plan that President Bush is pushing, that Condoleezza Rice is pushing during her tour of the Middle East. We have in the news this morning that Saudi Arabia's foreign minister is skeptical that Iraq's government can halt the sectarian violence plaguing the country. He says Saudis hope President Bush's plan will work, but that ultimately it's up to the Iraqis themselves. During a news conference with Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice, he said the means are not in our hands. Rice has said that debt relief would be a good way for the Sunni kingdom to help Iraq, but didn't press any specific new requests. She will be heading to Kuwait to meet with counterparts from 8 Arab countries as she continues her quest for assistance for Iraq. So that's the latest news, according to the Associated Press, on Secretary of State's Rice's tour of the Middle East, trying to rally support for the new plan for Iraq. Let's go back to the phones. Dan in Wanakee. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi there. I was curious about how we're doing on the Coalition of the Willing. I'm curious if you could tell us an update on who's in, who's out, who's fighting, who's there in substantial numbers, and please be sure to include Japan.
Okay, let's start in with Japan. The Coalition of the Willing, I unfortunately don't have all the names on the list and their numbers. The one thing I do know is that that coalition is actually dwindled in size over the last year, and in fact, there was a recent announcement by Blair that he was actually going to be reducing British troops as well. And so the broad trend line is impressively that in terms of that Coalition of the Willing, we're increasingly standing alone. It was never a broad coalition. The Americans were always doing the bulk of the fighting, especially in the very difficult areas of Baghdad. Other forces were providing, the British were mainly in the south, and then you also had various other teams that some had combat forces, but most were providing other kinds of logistical support in areas where they were not going to be in harm's way. So the Americans were always doing the bulk of the work, even if we did have various governments, most famously the Polish government, very much behind us. That, I think, raises the fact that the coalition has dwindled down to the United States really does, I think, get down to what amounts to be a general consensus that Iraq is a losing proposition. And while the Bush administration might be willing to say that there's still a chance to snatch victory from the jaws of defeat, it is the case that the reception being given to Rice in the region is, I think, very much illustrative of the sense that what we're dealing with here is a civil war that is about to expand, that there is no chance really to produce any kind of victory, and that at the end of the day, the Americans are in this, and other countries just cannot see why it is that it would be in their interest to sacrifice their troops or spend their money in what is a losing proposition that's been generated by an unpopular American government. Mm.
We heard in the news, too, that Condoleezza Rice said President Bush wants this sectarian violence in Iraq to be controlled or squelched in an even-handed way. But I've also heard pundits say that the U.S. and or the Iraqis needs to go in there and just kill this al-Sadr guy, and that would take care of it.
Well, it's always tempting to think that there's a quick fix or a magic bullet, and that somehow, if you will, a decapitation strike or assassination would end it, but it wouldn't. To pin the sectarian violence on Muqtada al-Sadr is, I think, to simply disregard everything we have come to know about Iraq. That the violence is deep-seated at this point. It's ingrained. There's a tremendous amount of mistrust between all the sectarian groups, and eliminating one person is not going to do it. The problem for the Bush administration is that, again, we're talking about a situation of a civil war in which the two groups are, in many respects, for the Sunnis, fighting, believe that they're fighting for their lives, and the Shia believe that they're about to win political power that's been denied them for decades. And so when Maliki is offered the opportunity to work with American forces, as he has said, he thinks that the real purpose of the surge should be to get rid of the insurgents, the Sunni insurgents. And the Sunnis believe that the first order of business has to be to wipe out the Shia militia. Mm-hmm. And so everybody wants the Americans to do their dirty work, and they're not going to cooperate with the Americans if, in fact, they can't use them as their own puppet.
Yeah. So then when the president made this speech on Wednesday, he said pulling out now, though, isn't an option as far as he's concerned because it would, among other things, lead to unimaginable slaughter. Is he right there?
Well, it's quite possible he's very accurate that if we were to leave now, it could very well lead to unimaginable slaughter. If we were to leave in a year from now, it's quite possible mm-hmm. it's going to lead to unimaginable slaughter. The issue is, as I said before, mm-hmm. this is a civil war, and in which the Sunnis are trying to fight for their survival, and the Shia believe that they are fighting for political power. And unfortunately, one of the things we've seen over the last 10, 15 years in a lot of these civil wars is that the only way that civil wars end is when one side emerges victorious, that most civil wars in the contemporary period do not end with a negotiated solution. They end instead with one side claiming victory. And the way you claim victory, especially in a situation that's now so deeply violent as Iraq, is where one side has vanquished the other. And that means that there's ethnic cleansing, there's mass violence against civilians, and so on.
Next is Bob in Madison. Hi, Bob.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call. You just touched on part of what my question was, or my concern, that being that regardless of when we pull out, it seemed to me, given the cultural dynamics in play there and the history, there's going to be potentially mass bloodshed whenever we leave. So the question then becomes, to my way of thinking, if it's going to happen anyway, how many more American lives will we be spending? How many more Iraqi lives will we be responsible for before we finally do decide, well, you know, it's not cut and run. It's not, well, we've wasted the, you know, we've put these lives to no purpose because we're leaving now. But rather, how many American lives can we save?
Yeah.
By accepting that we aren't going to change what's happening there, and let's just leave.
Professor Barnett, have you responded to that? But we also heard talk that if the Iraqi government doesn't step up to the plate, that it's possible that the U.S. might use that as the reason, all right, well, now we will leave.
Yeah, it's quite possible. And if the Maliki government happens to believe, and the Shia happen to believe, that they're about to be militarily victorious, then it's certainly in their incentive not to play along with the Americans and get the Americans out as quickly as possible so that they can actually have a clean, open playing field. The caller, Bob, really does, I think, point his finger to a number of, I think, very important dimensions. I guess one, though, that I'd like to begin with is that we can't forget what the Americans have done. That it's arguable, but I think a good argument can be made that this policy in Iraq is probably the single greatest foreign policy disaster, certainly of the past century and maybe of this future century. I hope to God that we don't have any kind of rivals for that title. because it has been from the very beginning. It was badly conceived, badly planned, and badly executed, and the consequences that we're seeing are just immeasurable. And we can speak about the American lives that have been lost, but understand that at this point, more Iraqis have died in Iraq under the American occupation than had ever died under Saddam Hussein. And that's a reality that most Iraqis, that Iraqis live with every day. So this has been a travesty of the highest magnitude.
Yeah, we only have a minute to go.
Okay,
yeah.
So what do we do? Do we put more lives in? And I think that's a very tough call. I don't think there's any reason to believe right now that things are going to get better. The strategy, I think, has to be to deal with the practicalities of a civil war and making sure it doesn't spread. And what does that mean? We don't want it to spread regionally. So if I was Condoleezza Rice and I was in talks in the region, what I'd be trying to do is make sure that when the civil war does really escalate, that we don't have the Saudis and the Jordanians and the Syrians and the Turks and the Iranians involved in a feeding frenzy. Because if that's the case, then it really does spread. And so if I was Secretary of State Rice, I would be focusing on making sure that as bad as things are, they don't get worse.
Thank you so much for being with us.
My pleasure.
Michael Barnett, Professor of Political Science at the University of Minnesota. This is the Ideas Network.